Today's program is a story of determination, faith and love. If that sounds a little different from the usual type of program you expect to hear at this time, I assure you, you will not be disappointed in listening to a story of one quite remarkable lady. Welcome to Wellbeing. I met Libby Levy as the result of a mutual friend telling me I just had to talk to her and hear her story. We're now going to share that story with you. Libby, thank you for coming in and talking with me today. Before we start telling the story, tell me a bit about your background. What family do you have?
My background is that I came from Sydney originally, and I'm now living in Newcastle for more than half my life. But I have a family of four children. I had a family of four children, but I lost one 10 years ago, so I now have three. Yeah. And a husband.
And a husband.
Well and truly.
What work did you do?
I started off as nursing, children's nursing in Sydney. And then after I'd had all my children, I then started to do lifeline work and then went on to do a full counselling course and ended up face-to-face counselling for marriage and other through Lifeline, yeah.
I understand that you have a daughter who also had a stroke, but at a very early age.
Yes. Susie was 9 when she had her stroke, hardly heard of in those days because she's now 47. It was at school and she was having headaches. And I was just about to go to the doctor about her headaches. And she had a seizure at school and collapsed and ended up in hospital with a stroke. Yes. And it was a few days before they were even game to do a special test to see whether that was what it was, because she was partly unconscious at the time, all the time.
And that's a very early age, isn't it?
Very early age. Mm. And there's only a few each year in Australia still, I think, at that age that have strokes. So it was very unusual, and it was a bad one as well.
Do you think that caring for her then and learning all those things at that time somehow helped you to understand the difficulties you faced when you had your stroke?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because and my nursing training, because I was a children's nurse, also went into that. So I was able not to be scared to ask the doctors questions about things where some mums think doctors are up there somewhere. I really felt that it absolutely helped me a lot, because then I went on to help in a stroke program at Day Centre on a Tuesday, New Ways it's called, at Merriweather. And I went there for 9 years. So all that, Susie and then all what I went on to do, just helped me not phase out too much in the early times, I think, anyway.
You mentioned to me when we were talking, when I first met you, that Susie now has a family. Has it left her with very much of a disability?
Yes, certainly. It's much more than mine. She lost her voice. She lost her right side where I lost my left. Mm. So she lost and still doesn't have use of her hand at all, or her arm, much of her arm. So, yes, it was, but, you know, she found ways around that, certainly when they were little, yes.
Mm. You said you worked at a stroke centre as well. Has the systems that, at the time Susie had her stroke, and the way you were taught to help them and show them how to do different things?
Yeah, well, certainly it's a difference because Susie was so young. So that was a whole different thing. And because we had to rehab her at Newcastle Hospital. Mm. Yeah, but they didn't have a rehab for children in Newcastle. Yeah. And we had to go to Sydney. And so we chose to keep her at home and go to rehab every day to the hospital because we thought it was more important to keep her home at that time. So, yes, I helped with the strokees themselves, but I also ran a group once a month for the carers, and we all needed, and I was one of them at the time, we all needed to vent how we were coping and how others were coping and sharing our knowledge. So that was a good thing to do, I think.
In the course of the last few programs, I've been talking to carers and people who look after carers. So I guess we all know how important it is that the carers are cared for.
Mm.
And obviously you picked that up on a very, very early stage.
Yes, when I was helping with the carers, yes. And it was so important for the carers because they were so scared. They didn't know what was going to happen in the future or how long this was all going to go on. And as we all know, strokes can be a part of the person's life for the rest of their life. There was a lot to come to terms with for the carers as well.
Can we go now to your own experiences? Tell me, what was your husband doing? Was he working or was he retired at the time you had your stroke?
Yes, he was still working, but kind of part-time.
So he was around in the house a reasonable amount at that time?
Yes, and it was a huge shock for him. So he was fortunate enough that he was old enough that he could start letting go of things, and that's what he started to do straight away. Well, because I was bad, he didn't know what was going to happen. So
yeah.
His mind went in all sorts of directions, which didn't work out in the end. But anyway, he was still working.
Let's turn now to the actual experience of your stroke. When it happened, did you feel any pain anywhere?
No, it was amazing because it was 7 o'clock in the morning. I was reading some mail, and the only thing that happened was no pain, no anything. All it was that I was trying to read this letter and I couldn't make sense of it. And I read it about 4 times and I still couldn't get the gist of it. And luckily, I mean, John was across the hall in the garage and I went over to him and just said, "Can you read this to me, Dale? I can't understand it." And that's when I got this a look that I will never forget. He just was absolutely so startled and scared and just took my arm.
What did he do? I mean, he obviously realised there was something very, very wrong. So he took you back into the house?
Yes. What had happened and what I didn't know about, my whole left side had dropped of my face. Just my face at this stage. So he just took me by the arm and said, "I think you better lie down, Lib." And I said, look, John, all I want you to do is read this letter. You know, that's... He said, "I think I better call an ambulance." And as I looked in the mirror, as I was lying down and looked in the mirror, I could see my whole face had dropped. It was just startling, totally startling, because I had no idea it had happened at all.
You're listening to Wellbeing, and today I'm talking with Libby Levy. Libby, can you tell us about how you felt physically and emotionally when the ambulance arrived and carted you off to hospital?
Well, the ambulance driver was gorgeous. He was so funny, and he was just cracking all these jokes and putting me at ease, really. He did cart me off to hospital, but I took things under my wing, and I did what I know now wasn't the right thing, and I talked him into taking me to a private hospital down the road. Of course, I thought it'd be easier for John. And I wasn't very bad. I knew I wasn't very bad. So, and I knew what I could do. I was even asking for ice to put on, because I knew that ice helped the paralysis. And so I was starting that already. I was in my faculty. I was quite fine.
Quite
I thought.
Well. And what happened from there?
Well, I was there a day, and that night I started to get a severe headache. And when I mean a severe headache, it was excruciating. There was no doctors around. The nurses were kind of doing my vital signs. I knew there was something terribly wrong with me. I just could feel, but could do nothing about it. I've never felt so helpless in my whole life, because I knew something drastic was happening. And so with the faith I had, the thing that stood out to me looking back now was I put myself into the hands of God, and I just said, "Look, this is too big for me, God. I give myself to you." And over that night, I slipped into unconsciousness. Yes, so that's...
And they took you from the private hospital where you were to the John Hunter?
Yes, well, of course, then all the tests were done and so on. And to say that I'd had a very large bleed and things were not good at all. And a surgeon came from the John Hunter to say, "Look, I'm going to have to take you over there because I think I'm going to operate tonight. I have to relieve the pressure on the brain from the bleeding." Yeah.
When you got to the John Hunter, how much do you remember of the first few days?
Yeah, well, the rest of that night, I knew nothing. Mm. I mean, I was just out to it. I think I was unconscious probably about 36 hours. The first few days, you're saying, yes, it was interesting because my son had just flown in from Japan to find this. He was coming
welcome
anyway.
Home.
Yeah, welcome home. Yes. So, and he has a very strong faith. He said that he would sit here by me all night. And so prayer chains went out all over the place. I was absolutely stunned when I realized just how many people cared to pray for me. It was just awe-inspiring, really. He sat and he prayed for me. The surgeon came in. What he did do was say, I'm going to try one thing before I operate, and that is to give your mum large doses of steroids. Because sometimes, and my understanding is, that it can shrink the brain and allow the bleeding to take its place. Now, that's really scary when I think it could shrink my brain. But anyway, whatever happened to it, I think those two things, the steroids and the prayers that surrounded me, something worked, and he didn't have to operate. And in fact, he said to Dave in the morning, now, you know, I believe in prayers. I was so sure that I was going to operate on your mum last night. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
How soon did you become aware that the left side of your body was affected?
Well, it's hard to sort of remember because the steroids and the bleeding caused a lot of disruption in my brain, as you can imagine. It was quite a while, I think, at least a few hours before I realized, once I'd come out of my unconsciousness. I was told that I wasn't moving. I didn't know it.
Yeah.
Because, you see, my brain had stopped working and telling me that I had a left side of my body.
Oh, okay.
It didn't exist.
Mm.
And it's very hard to explain to someone or even know that you're not even aware if you're lying on your hand or if you're sitting on it or all that sort of thing. And so it was quite a while before it actually got into my brain, and I made lots of kind of faux pas about this because they'd give me a tray for breakfast or something, and I would ring the bell and say, look, I haven't got a teaspoon. They'd gently and very patiently reach across to the left side and say, here it is, Libby, you know. And so, again, I did it. I made a big faux pas because I didn't know it even was there. I hadn't moved my head enough to realize that the spoon was there.
You said the left side of your face had dropped. Did you lose any sight in your eye?
Yes, I lost a bit of muscle tone in my eye, so I found it very hard to read in the weeks to come. I couldn't read for very long at all. It actually pained, so I ended up doing something about that too in the end, but yes.
Now, let's go back to your hand. You said you'd lost all sensation and knowledge of your hand, but just a while afterwards you were aware that your hand was starting to move. Tell me about that.
Yes. No, that wasn't until I got to rehab, and that was probably about 3 weeks. My son, Dave, was absolutely sure. He had the faith to know. He just knew that my hand was going to work again. I didn't have that same feeling, and he'd come and say, how's it going, Mum? Oh, no, Dave, you know, nothing's happening yet. I can't do anything. And so he'd say, oh, it's okay. But one night, and it was Easter, I remember, and I looked down and I saw that my fingers were moving. Now, if I hadn't looked, I wouldn't have known they were moving.
Mm.
But there was just this beginning of a little movement. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. But I couldn't do anything about it. I had no say in it.
Mm.
It just did it. And so over the nights, I thought, now I'm going to keep this a secret because this is Dave and he's not here. This is Dave's thing. He's really believed in this for me. So I'm going to wait. So every night when all was quiet, because they kept us very busy in rehab, I used to try. And in the end, in about 3 days, that connection was made in my brain. And I can't say anything else, but there was a definite connection that one night I could actually do it and mean that I was going to do it and straighten it out again. ever so slightly.
But yeah. It was there, never.
But it was there.
Yeah. Mm. Are you naturally left-handed or right-handed?
No, I'm right-handed. That was a blessing, really.
Yeah.
You have to learn to do it again.
I remember you telling me an interesting story, which we both found a bit funny, about a clock.
Mm.
I think he was still in the John Hunter at this stage.
Yes. The steroids, as I said, drove me a bit crazy. And funny things happened. And one night, I was looking at the clock. I thought it was the clock, but I looked at the clock all night, trying to work out what the time was. Now, it didn't seem to move. It didn't seem to change. But I knew it had to change, and I didn't know what was happening. But, yes, that was that. So John came in, and I said, "Look, Dahl, I've been trying to work out the time all night. No. What is the time on that clock?" And he looked at me and he said, "Well, Dahl, that's the exit sign." So luckily we could laugh about it, because otherwise we'd cry about it. But, you know, that's the sort of thing. I got tripped up by crazy things.
And obviously you're not the first person for this to have happened to. I'm glad that you can laugh about it and see the funny side of it.
Yeah, well, I wrote a poem about that, because I thought that the staff could have told me, and maybe they did and I didn't take it in, that steroids, as much as I was taking, could send you a bit crazy and even have hallucinations and all sorts of things. And, you know, I don't remember anyone telling me, so I actually wrote a poem because I was angry about it and got it off my chest by writing a poem about it.
You're listening to Wellbeing. I'm Iris Nichols, and I'm talking today with Libby Levy. Libby, you went from the John Hunter Hospital to a rehab centre. How long were you there?
I went to Toronto Rehab. I was there for 2 weeks. I mean, it's just boggling to me to realise that I was in John Hunter for 2 weeks and I was in rehab for 2 weeks. And they were all saying to me, "Libby, we've never seen anyone recover as quickly as you. We set a program for you and you've already passed it before we even get to you. I think you better go home."
There was a hint there.
Yeah, so, I mean, quite miraculous, really.
Yeah. What sort of things were you doing there?
Well, a rehab is full on. It's speech therapy, physio, occupational therapy, every day. And then at the same time, they were really great there. They said, "Now, we've heard that you're interested in doing a bit of drawing and mucking around, so we're going to set up a little corner for you, and you can just go to it whenever you like. Here's the paper, here's the paint, and just go for it." And that was great, because when I did not have visitors and I did not have anything else to do, I did two or three, and it was really helpful to do that.
Tell me about the butterfly.
While I was at John Hunter, I drew a symbol of a butterfly, and it was just a tiny little butterfly on the page. But I was rather proud of it. And so a friend of mine, Lois Parrish, who is an art therapist, came to see me, and I said, "Look what I've done, Lois." And she just looked at it, and she said, "Libby, do you realize that you haven't filled in the left side?" And I looked at it, and for the first time, I saw that I hadn't, and I had never realized that I hadn't. And so I had delicately done all the veins of the right wing, but the left wing was totally empty. It was in the shape of a wing, but there was nothing in it.
Mm.
But that was a real aha moment, if you like, for me, because I realized just how deficit I was on the left side. You know, I knew at some level, and they were telling me all the time, but for me it really got to the bottom of my being. This is how big this deficit is. Yes, so it was a hugely important butterfly.
You told me a little while ago that there is another drawing of which you're very proud, and it has a great recognition for you. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's one I drew. It's called Connecting Connectors. And what I was trying, and this was done in John Hunter too, so this was all done in the first, you know, few days of my stroke. One night I was trying to work out. I knew, this is a very spiritual image, I knew that God was healing me at some level, and at some level I wanted to try and put it into an image. So there are two hearts, and it's very hard to explain, but it looks like a kind of a person with two big hearts as a head. I mean, it looks really funny. But it just meant that God is, for me, God is love, and somehow or other he is connecting these connectors together.
Libby, was there any stage through all of this that your faith ever wavered? And did you ever say, why me?
No, it didn't waver. I think I'd been through a lot in my life up to this stage, you know, losing a daughter and my daughter having a stroke and all those, and a lot of other things as well, that I just knew that God was there, and if I was in and walking with him and in his hands, then
no, okay.
I'm very grateful I didn't have that fear, because a lot of people have a lot of fear about the future. And I didn't have that fear. And so it says in the Bible, love takes away fear, wipes out fear. And for me, that's exactly what happened. So I didn't have that fear, which I'm very grateful for, because I know it. I think it can probably stop healing a bit. You know, it puts blocks on the healing process.
Having met you, I know that you are quite capable of running your home. You do all sorts of outside things like public speaking about your stroke and the results of it. Do you find you tire easily?
Yes, I do. And I still do a little. I mean, at the moment I've just flown home from overseas, so I'm a bit jet-lagged as well. But, yes, I have to monitor what I do. It's very important not to overdo things. Otherwise, I start muddling up my words. I still do that. I put tenses the wrong way, and I put him and her back the front, and, you know, numbers are kind of funny. And, yes, I do get caught up occasionally. But it's all because I've been doing too much, I think, in my brain gets overtaxed, I think.
Where did the idea of your book come from?
Well, it emerged. It emerged in my jottings. And, you know, I had the most amazing urge to write down and to draw images. It was like I had to do it. It became a real energy inside me, I suppose. And so I was jotting down, and probably on day five I put book number one coming up, and I thought, my goodness, what did that come from? and I think it's funny because it's book number one, so is there ever going to be a book number two? I don't know. But you know, the book evolved as quite easy for me. People have said, you put it together so quickly. And yes, I did, but you know, it was already half done before I decided I would do it, because I had the drawings, I had the poetry that I wrote at the time, and what I needed to do was weave the story around it and get some people, like my children and my husband, to write their side of it as well. So it just came together, and I wrote it in quite a large print, so that people who do have eye problems can read it themselves.
Now, the book is called
Connecting Pathways, A Triumphant Journey Through Stroke.
Is it for sale generally?
Well, it's for sale, but generally, because I self-published, it is at the Anglican Cathedral in Newcastle. Or you can telephone 0249 293015, or write to Post Office Box 929, Newcastle, 2300. And I could send you out one. It's $20 now, yes.
Libby, just before we finish, I was watching an old Parkinson program very recently, And he was talking to Kirk Douglas, who at that stage had had a severe stroke. And he said at the end of the program, he had a motto of never give up. Do you have such a motto or a similar motto?
If you'd call it a motto, it's something that I've always feel very strongly about, and that there's always another way. And that has come through from when Susie had her stroke and working with people with stroke, that if we can stay flexible enough in our minds and find a way around whatever we can't think we can't do, there are always a way to do things. It mightn't be conventional, it might be very slow, but it's a way anyway, and it gives us an independence. So there's always another way is important for me.
I've been talking today to Libby Levy as she tells us about her experiences having had a stroke. Libby, thank you for coming in and telling us your story. I'm quite sure it's an inspiration to a lot of people who have either just recently had a stroke or maybe in the future will remember your words if they should be in the same position. So thank you for coming in and sharing with us.
Oh, that's my pleasure. It was really, really nice. I like being stretched.
My guest today has been Libby Levy. Thank you for being with us. Until next time, and you're able to join me, this is Iris Nichols on behalf of the team wishing you well.